This is an ABC podcast.
Roots and Shoots with Amber and Sabrina.
And Mark Tuchek.
ABC Radio Perth and WA and the ABC Listener.
I left my run too late to try and find the proper opening for you. Good morning.
Good morning, Amber.
You know what's going to happen today?
What?
More gardening questions are going to get answered.
That's good.
Then, as is usual, because of the nonsense that occurs.
Oh, okay.
When we don't have someone sensible in the room. Good morning, Amber and Mark. This disgusting mass appeared overnight in my veggie tank under a rock melon plant. I've never seen it before in all my years of the garden. I'll make that picture big for you shortly. I hosed it off into the soil thinking something had thrown up in there, but it reappeared the next morning. Is it dog vomit slime mold? Ew! What's the best thing to do with it, says Pauline from Meriden. That is, ooh, it's gross, isn't it?
Well, it very well could be. There is such a thing.
What?
Yes. I know.
What's it called?
Yeah, dog vomit slime mold.
For real? There is.
It's true.
It's true.
Yeah, and it looks exactly like that. So I think that's very cool that you've got that. So there's not much you need to do about it. It's not going to ruin your garden. It might ruin the look of the garden, but, you know, it's only going to affect the plants. But, yeah, it's really different, isn't it?
It does look like...
comes with sound effects as
Should I keep going? Wow. Well, congratulations to you, Pauline from Meriden. It's just unattractive. Will it go away? Will it die off? Is it seasonal?
It's seasonal. It'll go away. And, yeah, and if you're lucky, you'll get it next year.
Could you feed it to your chickens?
Oh, I don't think so.
Don't know about that.
No, no.
Can you feed the canna lily that you've got to your left to me?
Wow. This is what I'm excited about. I am going to introduce you to, this is Canna Cleopatra.
She's very beautiful.
Okay. And Canna Cleopatra is green, but it has burgundy variegations in it. So Cleopatra's
very pretty.
She's torn between Egypt and Mark Antony in Rome. You can see the slit down the middle here. But it's a very variable canna. It grows to about a metre and a half tall. But occasionally, because the variegations actually are very, you know, they come out differently at different times of the year. But then it gets a very cool flower.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Look at that. So the flower, it comes out yellow with a stripe, an orange stripe in it, occasionally, not all the time. So it's one of those things, it's like Christmas or a box of chocolates, you don't know what you're going to get. And when you do get one, you should be very happy and take photos and
it's stunning.
Show your neighbours.
It says it's a water plant on there. Is that right?
Well, cannas, they like to have wet feet. And so if you're going to have them in the garden, in the ground, make sure they've got plenty of good soil to keep that moisture up. They can sit in a pond over the summer periods when it's warm. But cannas are fantastic plants and easy to grow. And this one, Canna Cleopatra, is very desirable.
The variegation on it is absolutely spectacular, that difference between the green and the purple. Is it purpurea?
Well, purpurea, very good, is, you know, it's got that purple streak
it is
to
purple.
It. But it's not quite out in garden centres yet. It's very rare, so that people are going to have to go on a hunt for it. If you're lucky, you'll get one.
Yeah. Kath is in Capel. What's your question for Mark, Kath?
I sent in some photos of some leaves we've got that have got something on them that's affected our passion fruit, grapevine. I had hollyhocks in. We had to pull all them out. We've treated with oil plus magnesium and tomato dust to no avail.
Okay. So there might be different things going on those different plants, but on the leaves that you've sent in, There are little aphids underneath the leaves. So what they're doing is they're sucking all the leaves. They're kind of distorting the leaves.
Yep.
And then they call that that mottling on the surface of the leaf.
Okay. Right.
So with aphids, because they're protected on the undersides of the surface, undersides of the leaves, you need to get in there with – you can actually – really badly affected leaves, you're going to just prune them off and because the leaves are just wither and die, and, of course, you know, the aphid's got nothing to suck on.
Yeah.
A sharp jet of water is very effective for those kind of bugs, And there's also some little soap sprays, which are very kind of natural. Oh, yeah. Yeah, some soap sprays, which they don't like. You won't be able to use any of the oil-based sprays when it's very hot, but I'd stick to those soap sprays, quite effective.
Yeah, okay.
Hmm.
All right.
Good luck with that, Kath. Bye. Annie is in Carriedale. Hello, Annie. What's your question for Mark?
Oh, hi, guys. How are you going?
Good.
Good. I just sent in a photo this morning of this little critter. I don't know if you've got it there, Mark. It's
Can you give me some clues as to what you had in your text, Annie?
Okay, I just wrote.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, got it.
Hi, guys. Any idea what this little critter is?
Oh.
He smashed my roses. Yeah, it's horrible. They're everywhere, and I've eaten all anything that's green, and they've got really sticky feet. So, you know, if you go to pull them off the bloody, you know, off what they're eating, they stick on. You can hardly get them off, but they've got a really hard shell, and they just annihilate.
You've been pulling their feet off. That's a bit tricky. Been pulling their sticky feet off. Well,
trying to get them off the plant.
Oh, I see.
You know, like I'm trying to get them off the plant to have a look and see what they are, and they just stick onto the plant.
Oh, okay. Now, this is a weevil, and all right. So is it actually doing damage on your roses and things like that?
Oh, it's eating all the petals.
Okay.
And then all the green, and then like my irises and all my bloody old eyes, they're attacking that. The hollyhocks, they've attacked all the leaves from the hollyhocks as well.
Wow.
Anything that's green, it's just having a fat time.
Having a good go. Yeah, the trouble is, you know, these kind of pests actually proliferate this time of the year. If you're going to pick them off, you can squash them at the same time, which would be very effective. But
there's hundreds of them, Mark.
Is there?
It's not just like a couple. They're everywhere. I sprayed some oil and the washing detergent that Sabrina's got in her citrus book. I made up one of those and gave that a good spray.
Okay.
And that sort of worked for a little while, but I want to know where it's coming from and how to get rid of them completely.
Oh, well, that's the ultimate question, that one, because they just rock up. They actually do, the adults do fly. But with the sprays, too, that you can use on them, they're kind of effective for a short period, but it's just kind of through the life cycle of the weevil. Again, I would actually use a soap spray because that'll upset them enough to go somewhere else. And you'll find that it'll be a short period, this window at the moment, that they're in large numbers and they'll actually move on.
Okay. And so if the oil and the washing detergent, is that going to affect the frogs or anything like that in the garden?
The oil, no, it's not too bad. Oil's not, wouldn't be so effective for leaf-eating plants. It's more for sap-sucking plants that you'd use the oil-based spray. Detergent is very good because it just upsets them. You know, they won't like, you know, feeding on leaves that have got soap in them, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, yeah. So
okay,
I'd stick to that one. And usually the soap sprays are fairly low toxic. They break down and so they're okay for frogs eventually.
There you go. Good luck with that, Annie.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
1-300-222-720 if you would like to ask Mark to check a question. There's not much he doesn't know. He's very approachable, which is such a compliment these days. We don't tell little girls that they're beautiful anymore, Mark. We say she's very approachable.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the nicest thing you can be, isn't it? Do you reckon?
Approachable is always good, isn't it?
It is. It's a good quality.
So you're not there with your arms crossed. You're sitting there with your arms open. So.
Correct, and you're not terrifying. Peter in Busselton says, my neighbour's dogs were eating what might have been a slime mould and their diarrhoea was so bad they needed a vet visit.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
Would that be, what was it called, the dog vomit slime?
Yes, yeah.
The things you learn on Roots and Shoots. Good morning, lovely people. Could you please weigh in on what's wrong with my mulberry leaves? I can't see bugs or obvious disease spots. I've monitored the water and it's definitely not for lack of water. So Mark is zooming in close on that. They're curly at the ends. They look a little dry and crispy. Yeah, they're curling in on themselves, aren't they?
They are. And what we can't see is if this is in a pot. does it say?
I'm sensing a pot. I'm sensing the presence of a pot.
Using the force?
Yes.
Excellent. I'm using the force as well. I think this is in a pot. And you can't really... it's not through the lack of water, because sometimes in a pot it's a bit deceiving, because you know, you water a plant in a pot, and if the potting mix is water repellent, hydrophobic, what happens is it runs down the side of the pot and doesn't actually wet the root ball. It looks like it's up against a wall.
And a hot wall.
Yeah, it might be a bit windy. And it has been trimmed, so you know, obviously there's been some dead leaves on it. I would actually just stick my finger in the soil. So if it's kind of damp to, you know, finger depth, then it's being watered effectively, okay? Because sometimes, you know, you water on the top and it just wets the top centimetre, and like I said, runs down the side and out the bottom. So that'd be the first thing I'd be checking. I don't think it's a pest or a
disease.
Perhaps
let us know if it's in a pot, if we are... You know, me being the non-expert, correct in assuming that it is in a pot. Ooh. Now, Barb is in Busselton. Barb has this beast here. What is this beast, Barb, that you've sent us a photo of?
Well, it's a European, I think it's a European fir. It was hard to get. I got managed to get it here in Busselton about 30-something years ago.
Wow, yep.
And been growing, very slow growing.
Yes.
And it has been trimmed once, and they're now 35 years old. And this year I've noticed all this dead stuff. I've never seen so much of their little leaves laying all over, all around them. And in the centre it's quite dead looking, with all the there's no greenery really on the inside. I wonder if they've had their chips.
Okay, it looks like it's definitely a conifer, and it may be a taxus. Does that ring a bell? Like a yew? Have you heard of yews?
Yes.
So it could be one of those. Now these particular conifers usually grow very densely, and they have a lot of leaves on the outside, and they are quite dead in the middle because they don't get light into the middle of the plant. But having said that, your plants are actually quite yellow, which indicates maybe a bit of an issue down at soil level. So is it reticulated where you've got it?
Yes, it is.
Do you use a wetting agent at all, like around the soil?
Not on that, no.
Okay.
Not on that, I don't.
I would probably suggest that. Or have a look down, if you can get down to where you can see the trunk meeting the ground, and just have a fossick around there to see if it's any, if it's very dry, or if you've got ants in there, because it looks like it's under some kind of stress. It doesn't look like a pest or a disease, but it's more like a cultural problem, like stress. So
It's happened to both the trees. They're planted side by side. And it's happened to both of them. I wondered at first whether they'd been attacked by possums, decided to move in and live there, but I can't really see any proof of that.
No.
So you think down at soil level.
Yeah. So try and get down as close to the trunk as you can, where the trunk meets the ground, and just have a look around at soil level to see if it's dry, if there's ants, or if there's anything going on in that area. It wouldn't be possums because it's not physical damage, but it's more a cultural thing.
Okay, and to treat it, just to get a wetting agent, do you think?
Definitely this time of year, because their root system is very fine, and it does cause a lot of water repellency underneath them anyway. So, that'll help.
Thank you very much. I'll have a good look.
Good luck with that, Barb. Guess what about the pot? We were right.
There we go.
There you go. See, you know channeled what you're
the doing. You said the. You said it first. I just followed your lead.
I felt the presence of the pot. I don't know how I knew that at this hour of the day. Helen is in Mullaleyup, which is near Balingup. Good morning to you, Helen. What's your question for Mark?
Good morning. Good morning, Mark.
Hello.
I have got a very rare plant. It comes down through the family for generations from England. I did write the name of it down.
Oh.
Where did you go and find it? Off you go.
Amber, use the force.
Somatophyllum.
What's it called?
Somatophyllum bipinnatifidum.
Oh, we might be needing to do some spelling.
Yeah, the first name is makes sense, but the first one doesn't. Can you pronounce that again? Or can you spell it? Have you got the name?
It's called a tree philodendron.
A tree philodendron. Okay, we're getting close now. I wonder what that is. And what's your question about it?
Well, it's got quite big, and I want to propagate it and make some small ones.
Okay.
A tree philodendron. Just hit me with that second name again.
No, it's by. Is it by?
B-I-P-I.
Yeah.
Double N. A-T.
Binatifidum. Binatifidum.
That's
the
one.
Binatifidum.
Yeah. So that just describes the shape of the leaf. So it's bipinnate. I'm making this up as I go. So bipinnate, it means it's got leaves that have just got lots of segments to it. So it's divided. Yep. But is it definitely a philodendron? No, because you mentioned a different name at the start.
Yeah, it's somatophyllum.
S-O-M?
T-H-A-U.
Oh. Come on, Emma.
T-H-A-U-M-A-T-O-phylum.
Asha, are you getting this too?
Typing. We are Googling. Thematophyllum, Wikipedia. Okay, gotcha. It is that. There you go. This is really interesting radio for everyone else, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is something that I don't know. I have never heard of this particular plant. So you're right. It is very rare and you're very lucky. Thematophyllum. Sounds very
And what's wrong with it again?
But she wants to propagate it. So.
She wants to propagate
it. Nothing's wrong. It's huge and I want to propagate it. But I can't see little pups and things that you do when you see other things like it.
Okay. And is it in the ground or in a pot?
It's in the ground.
Okay. And you've never seen it. It obviously hasn't flowered for you.
Oh, yes. It's had like a red fruit.
Oh, there we go.
Like a red spike fruit.
Okay. I reckon that would be your best bet is to harvest the fruit, and it kind of looks like it needs to be sowed straight away. I don't think this particular plant, some seeds you need to dry out for a spell, or treat them in a certain way, scarify them. But it looks like it would be better off if you get the seeds, wash out the fruit, and then sow them straight away. So I think maybe trying the fruit would be the best bet. If you've noticed no pups coming off the bottom.
No pups.
It's just like a big stalks, you know, like trees. And they've got long roots that come down into the ground, and I can't see any pups anywhere around the tree. Well, it's a plant, but it's like a tree. It's huge.
Yeah, there's all these other methods you can use, like aerial layering. So if you Google that, that might be an option for you.
Which says, identify a healthy stem and remove leaves around a node. Make an upward slanting cut about one-third into the stem. Insert a toothpick to keep the cut open and apply rooting hormone. That's a good start. You might have
there's
to...
There's several options.
There we go.
And tease apart the roots, split it up. That is one other suggestion, but it sounds like it's too big. Helen, hopefully we have been of some assistance there, and we're all very jealous of your rare plant. Nola is in Bunbury. Good morning to you, Nola. What's your question for Mark?
Oh, good morning to you both. Mark, I sent a photo in of my silver princess. It's been in the ground coming up 2 years. I want to lop its head off. Can I do that? Not down to the ground. I don't want to coppice it, but if you have a look at the photo, if it's available to you, there's a lot of growth right at the top, and I just want to lop that off to let everything else grow underneath it.
Okay. So Silver Princess, they're kind of floppy anyway, so it's obviously going off to the side, and you can trim it. So if you pick If you go down to a point where you've got a node like pointing more upright than sideways, and then cut it to there, it should go up. But then eventually it'll start to weep over because that's the nature of the plant. But yes,
I want it to weep over. I just want it to weep over where I want it to weep over.
Oh, right. So we're managing.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You can do that. Yes. Yeah. So you're on the money. It's easy to do and it won't hurt the plant at all.
There you go. All right. Are you happy with that?
Thank you. I love having you back on, Mark.
Okay, thank you both.
Thanks, bye. Nola. Lisa is in Bassendean. Hi, Lisa. What's your question for Mark?
Hello. Good morning. I have I had a hole in the greenery in my side yard along where the car drives, so I put a grevillea in there, and it's done the job. It's huge. However, it's next to a bottle brush, and the grevillea is now a bottle brush, all except one small branch at the bottom, which still has the big yellowy-orange grevillea flower, and the rest is bottle brush. And I don't know why. Anything I can do to turn it back to its grevillea state. It's weird.
So they wouldn't have had a mixed baby because they don't cross with each other. So they're different kettles of fish. So Callismans are Myrtaceae, Grevillea is a Proteaceae family. So what you've found is probably the bottle brush is dominating. So maybe it's just grown bigger than your Grevillea and your poor Grevillea is just struggling out the bottom somewhere. So you
can't. The Grevillea is like 3 metres tall. The bottle brush is 2, if that. And there's just clearly one branch coming out of the grevillea with the big, you know, it's bigger than my whole hand, orange flower. And all the other flowers on the tree of the grevillea are small and red, bright red, and don't open completely. And from a distance, they look like the bottle brush. It's weird.
Oh,
I should have sent a photo.
Yeah, a photo would have been terrific because, it's quite perplexing. It could be, I don't know, mistletoe, could be a sport. But, yeah, a photo would be good.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Go out and take a photo and come back.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. James in Craigie has a photograph he sent in a while ago. Please help my grapevine. Always produces a bounty of red seedless grapes at Christmas time, fertilised by a troop of guinea pigs, but now has some weird discoloration that has taken off over the last 6 days. Please save Christmas, says James in Craigie.
Oh, no.
What is that?
Discoloration on the...
It's very... Yeah, I can't see clearly.
It's not easy to see, is it? Let's see if we can make that a little bit bigger. No, is the short answer to that. Oh, maybe a little bit there. Where's the discoloration? On the leaf? Is that what he's talking about there?
Yeah, so there's a couple of odd leaves in there. It could be fungal. It's a bit hard to see.
Perhaps, James, you could give us a call and maybe describe in more detail. Mark needs a bit more detail.
Yeah, I can't quite see it, but I think it's obviously very dense and it's probably like a fungal disease, like it could be powdery mildew or something like that. So if it is powdery mildew, that'll be quite evident when you look up very closely on the leaves and thinning it out, letting the air in, letting the light in and... there are some kind of sulphur sprays for powdery mildew, yep.
There you go. Give that a go. Patris is in Goolwa Beach in South Australia. Good morning, Patris.
Good morning.
What's your question for Mark?
Hello.
Yes, samphire.
Yes.
Or sea asparagus. When I was up in the Kimberleys around Wyndham, Cunanara area, we used to use it in salads and stir fries. It was bloody delicious. And I've just discovered it here at Goolwa Beach.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm just wondering whether I could take a little piece and put in a pot or...
Technically you're not allowed to harvest things from the beach line because that's usually protected. But there are many different types of samphire. So it's probably a different variety from what you saw up in the Pilbara, but still just as edible, and you can eat it, and very popular as a native bush food plant. So
yeah, this one's well away from the beach. It's what we call Sugar's Beach, but it's well away from the actual beach.
Yep.
And it's growing everywhere, and I thought if I just grab a little piece, whether it would propagate into a pot.
They do, yeah, you can propagate them by cuttings very easily, and usually don't have to use any kind of rooting hormone or anything like that. They propagate quite well, so yeah, you can do that.
Oh, fantastic. And my weather forecast here in Goolwa Beach?
Oh, yes.
19 degrees at midday, and we had 1 millimetre over the last 24 hours, blue skies at the moment.
I'm a bit jealous. It's a bit too warm here for me. Patrice, thanks for calling into the show. Now, our regular reporter, Christine Layton, has been at it again, and she's going to take you to a magical place, a place called Ecoburbia. It's not a festival. It's not a shop. It's a 1970s Italianate home turned urban farm. Fruit, veggies, chickens, goats, and it's just minutes out of Frio. Former school principal and sustainability advocate Shani Graham and well-known local muso and professional sand sculptor Tim Darby combined their talents to make this happen, and you're invited to see it all in person from 10 o'clock this morning. Community reporter Christine Layton has a preview for you.
Well, I'm a feral feline, you're a British feral cat. I'm rough and tough, and I never get enough to turn this feline fat. I'm hungry, 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 as I'm skulking through your town. If you got fur or feather or fins, gonna gobble you on down.
As I drove down Livingston Street in Beaconsfield, just east of Frio, I noticed two things. The crystal blue water of the port to my right, and a professionally sculpted sandcastle the size of a tractor to my left.
I think it's just amazing. I mean, it's just like capturing a whole sense of fun and enjoyment of life. There's goats, chickens, and of course, Shani. I mean, it's just incredible.
That's Steph. She became friends with sustainability power couple, yep, I'm calling it, Shani Graham and Tim Darby, after coming to one of their community events at Ecoburbia. Back in 2013, they decided to transform number 16 into a productive shared space, and that they have.
We've got some onion here, we've got some leek, we've got some tomatoes coming up, zucchinis, carrots, kale.
Okay, so Sabrina wouldn't like the kale part, but that's not all.
Gate here. Head on in. The chickens here happily walking away, doing their thing. They're all called Isa. There's eight of them. Their eyes are brown. And if we go around the corner here, the goats. Oh, here we've got Mama Goat. Cleo is in the stable, and that's Kaya and Wonju. There they go. They're having, I don't know if you can hear them there, but they're sloping away on Mum.
Oh, is that...
That's her udder.
My goodness.
Yeah, it's huge.
It is huge.
Well, she's producing a lot of milk for a couple of big boy babies. Yep. And then this other little goat in here is Lady Marmalade. She looks like she's pregnant, but she's just had so many babies, everything's stretched a bit.
Same, babe, same. Last year they welcomed 600 people through their doors, which is huge. So why do it again?
I'm not sure. It's funny, actually, because in the build-up beforehand we go, we're never doing this again, this is not happening. And on the day, it is so beautiful to share something that you love. I really want people to think differently about what they might be able to do at their house and in their neighbourhood, in the community that they live in. So one thing is like veggie garden, but even like the goats. If you have a dog with a big backyard for your dog, you have a goat, you got milk.
Tim is a musician with a fine arts degree, and Shani is currently studying to become a death doula.
One of the first things that they do is they say, examine your own life. What do you have that you really want to do in your life that you haven't kind of done yet? And I feel like I sound like some motivational speaker, but I feel really content with my life. We enjoyed running workshops. I enjoy marrying people, which is another thing we do. Tim loves doing his sand sculpture. He's really into his music at the moment. So I think we've worked really hard to get to this point for 12 years, and we're sort of... We're having the life that we dreamt that we'd have.
So when it comes to creating your own eco space, Shani and Tim say you don't need hectares of land in order to have a farm. or at least some goats. And hey, if you do go along today, you must watch your step.
Guess who we found yesterday? We've got a breeding pair of bobtails that are hanging around. Yeah, we've put some low water bowls out for them. So I don't know, they'll probably run and hide away from all the people. But yeah, we do have a lot of wildlife.
That was Tim Darby and Shani Graham. You can see their home at 16 Livingston Street in Beaconsfield today between 10 and 4 o'clock. Best to park at the primary school down the road. The door charge of $5 will be donated to St. Pat's to buy a pizza van for the local community. What a great cause.
Thanks to your donations.
I'm absolutely touched. You're bringing tears to my eyes. So you've gone from 10,000 to 25,000.
This is just my inheritance. I don't have any need for any more money than I've got.
720 ABC Perth.
And you're listening to Roots and Shoots, where Mark Tuchek is taking your calls this morning, 1300 222 720, or you can text in what ails your plants, 0437 922 720. We are revisiting James in Craigie's grapevine. We didn't notice that there were close-ups down the page on the document. Mark, what can you see by looking at those closer photos?
Yes, apologies, James. We've got the photos now. So it looks more like... I mentioned before it could have been powdery mildew, but it looks more like downy mildew. Both kind of devastate grapevines. Similar kind of treatment, though. You want to thin out the canopies to let air circulate and light penetrate. But with powdery mildew, you'd want to use sulfur-based sprays. But with downy mildew, you'd probably want to use copper-based sprays. So it's obviously struggling. I'd also give it a bit of water and fertilizer to help its own resilience to disease. If it starts to get a bit of a feed, it can get a bit healthy. So, yeah, if you look up downy and powdery mildew, it's got the lot. There you go.
There you go. It's a sick little grapevine. Tina is in Menorah. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning, Amber and Mark. I've sent a picture of my Wallamai pine. I'm the custodian of this dinosaur tree.
Wow. Oh, yes.
And it got, someone suggested that it had like not been watered and some of the fronds or leaves are dried.
Yes.
Like lower down from previous years. They've never dropped off. I didn't know whether to prune them or just leave them, or what would you suggest?
Okay, so Wallamai pines are very fascinating. They are dinosaur plants. You know about them, Amber?
Mm.
Yeah. So they're very cool.
I don't
cool.
know enough.
Oh, I was managing Waldex at the time that we got them in to the store back in the, early 2000s. But, yeah, so your plant has suffered drying out. It's not a pest or a disease. But the trouble, because it grows so slowly, and once those leaves get damaged, they actually don't recover. So those particular ones are all brown and crispy, won't come good. It's going to look a bit kind of lopsided if you start pruning a few off. If it bothers you, you can do that. If it doesn't bother you, just leave it. And it looks like it's in a new pot with potting mix.
Last year's repot.
Yes.
With a native potting mix. I'm doing the repot every couple of years.
Yes. Well, you can see how good the new growth at the top is because of that. So, not much more. You can't unfix those leaves, unfortunately.
No. So best not to cut them off, just let them do their own thing. Will they ever fall off, or is it just going to grow with them forever?
No, they'll eventually fall off, but it'll take some time. So if it bothers you that they look a bit ugly, you can trim them off. Otherwise, you can just leave them.
In this climate, because it's so different from where it originated, where's the best place to keep the pot? Does it like full sun? No, and that's the issue. I don't know quite where it is. I keep moving it to half sun, and it's a bit bendy at the moment.
Yeah. I would say morning sun, a little bit of afternoon shade is fine, but protect it from the wind is more than...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Have I got time for one quick one?
Sure.
I've got a blood lily, well, two, first flower in 5 years. What's the best way to keep them? The leaves have gone now, so it's just the bulb left. What should I do? Should they come out of the ground? Or they're in a pot, sorry. So should they stay in the pot, water them, don't water them, or what?
So a blood lily could be Haemanthus. What do you reckon, Amber? Could be,
no sense.
It's got this amazing flower that comes up that looks like plastic. That's like a sort of a cup shape with a sort of plasticky petals around the middle and spiky bits in the middle. It's quite amazing.
And the leaves are quite thick.
They're huge. They're like about half a metre long.
Yes.
There's only two leaves, yeah.
That's it. Yeah, so it's called Haemanthus, and the leaves will start to die down now, and you can leave it in the ground. You don't want to overwater it. The leaves, it does form quite a thick, big bulb, but as long as you don't overwater it so it doesn't rot away, it'll be fine. It'll just go dormant this time of the year, and then it'll come up again in... autumn next year.
Yep. Okay, great.
Early spring, rather.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Tina. Thanks for calling in. 1-300-222-720 if you would like to ask Mark a question. We've heard from Nola, who has run straight out the back and deadheaded the Silver Princess and has sent us the photo of the top of that Silver Princess.
The evidence. It's there
gone.
We go.
She got on with it.
Oh, it doesn't muck about.
You're very powerful, Mark. Controlling the gardens of Western Australia. Kay is in Busselton. Kay, what's your question for Mark?
I've got three little gem magnolias. I've sent a photo. The first one is doing brilliantly. The other two aren't. I'm wondering if they're lacking something, if you could tell by the photo. And also, can I cut the top off the very first one? Because that's gone mad.
Oh, well, what have we started here? So
decapitation.
I know. It's a theme running through the show. Okay, so the next two magnolias are suffering, and I suspect you'd want to have a dig around, again, where that trunk meets the ground, because it's a raised garden. If those particular ones have been planted too deeply, they'll suffer from collar rot. So that's an issue. So the first one's obviously very healthy and planted at the right level. The one in the middle, I suspect, is the case. And because it's a raised garden bed too, you have to be aware that it does actually become water repellent. So even though they're quite close together, raised beds like that, what happens is the water goes on top and just runs off the top. And so,
I have put a lot of wetter soil on it.
Perfect. Yeah.
Just recently, in the last, since I put the mulch around.
Yes.
So I should take the mulch away from the stem.
From the stem, exactly. That's right. Yeah. And you can then fertilise that a bit separately. But you can prune the top out of the magnolia. It'll go wider than it does tall if you do that.
That's good.
But
that's what I want.
Yep. You can do that too.
And it doesn't matter when you do it?
No, you can do that now.
Great.
And then, do that now and send us a photo of the bit you've chopped out the top.
Do it.
Okay, thank you.
That's your homework.
No minerals or anything needed for the middle one? I thought they might be lacking like trace elements or something.
You certainly can fertilise it, but I'd say it's more the fact that the mulch is up against the stem.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Easy Good. Fix. Thanks for calling in, Tina. 1-300-222-720 if you would like to speak to Mark. Somebody has suggested they needed more intel on suburban goats. That would be good, wouldn't it? I think it's good to start with a large block. I don't know anyone who's got one of those. Prune this fiddle leaf now, says Mary in Albany. Lower leaves not as healthy as top.
Yeah, chop the top out.
Yep. All the people who need a deadhead are getting in touch. Is it just that time of year, perhaps?
Oh, no, not really, but it's you can. The old leaves, again, same as the conifer one, those leaves won't recover and they'll eventually drop off, so they have a stem. But if you take the tips out of your fiddle leaf, it might send shoots out from the bottom. So if you just tip prune it rather than just hacking it too much and take the tips out, it might reshoot, but those leaves are done for.
There you go.
Mm.
Kaputski. Hi, this plant is grown out from a big sugar gum tree trunk that has been pruned heavily. Doesn't look like the original gum tree. What is it? Some sort of mistletoe, says Mitch.
Wow. It's very cool. And I'd say, Mitch, you're right. I'd say it's some kind of mistletoe. Mistletoes are parasitic plants, and so they need a host plant, and they obviously look quite variable, different from the host that they're on. So I don't know which mistletoe it is, but yes.
What do? Just leave it there or chop it off?
No, just leave it there.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They're good.
There you go. Oh, this is nice. Karina says, could we please have a shout-out for Professor Kingsley Dixon, who's been named the 2026 Senior Australian of the Year for WA. He's such an inspirational man. He is indeed, and it was lovely to see him get that. What have we got here now? What is the best fertiliser for a Wollemi pine?
Ooh. Okay. So even though I would just use a general all-purpose, even though it's a native, it's still a conifer, but because they are slow growing, I would use a slow release fertiliser.
There you go.
So just, you know, those prill fertilisers are quite effective. That's all we use. And yeah, very effective for Wollemi pines.
Tell me what I don't know about it. So it's been around since dinosaur times. There are some examples of them in Australia that are thousands of years old.
Well, even more, but they're, I think, interestingly enough, I think they flowered for the first time in ages, you know, from this pocket they discovered in the national park. And so everyone's very excited about the fact that they're flowering and they don't know why. But it was just one plant, its own species, that had just gone missing for, you know, everyone just walked past these particular plants until they were rediscovered. So it's got such a great story. And the fact that they're able to propagate them and release them to, you know, the average grower around the country and around the world.
How do we know that it's from those times? Like, or am I getting too granular in my questioning?
Well, I guess, I mean, there's a lot of smarter people than I, you know.
But have a crack.
Just have a crack, and they've just figured out that there's nothing like it and it hasn't changed in all that time, you know, because most plants, you know, over millennia, you know, do change and adapt to their conditions, but this has actually stayed as it was. Yeah.
Remarkable. Brad is in Safety Bay. If you would like to ask Mark a question, 1-300-222-720. Brad, what's your question for Mark?
Oh, g'day. Yeah, well, it's Brett, actually, but that's close enough.
Sorry. It wasn't close. No, I'm a bit tired now.
Yeah. I know...
La 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 la, you're still here.
We'll just chat amongst ourselves.
Brad, are you still here? Brad?
Oh, you're breaking up.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, we lost you.
Yeah, oh, it's a terrible reception.
Okay.
Terrible reception. Yeah, I know. Right. I've just got a passion fruit that's come up by itself. It's not grafted, it's come up from seed. Now, it's a smaller version, it's got smaller leaves, and it's darker green. Heaps of flowers, but it just won't fruit, whereas the other one's fine.
Okay.
Hello.
Yes. So, well, things from seed tend to be a bit variable from the parent plant. The fact that it's not fruiting, it just could be a pollination thing, so it could be the bees not doing their bit. Passion fruit and fruit set usually like warmer nights, as well, which we haven't got to yet. So if it's still a young plant, I wouldn't worry about it. But, yeah, just give it time, and I think nature will fix it.
All right. Okay, yeah, and I was just wondering if it's because it wasn't grafted or whatever it was. I don't know.
No, if you've got flowers on it, that suggests that the only thing that needs to happen is, you know, the fruit get pollinated. And so it doesn't have to. You don't have to have a grafted passion fruit. No.
All right. Yeah. No. I've been doing my, you know, midwife stuff on it, and there's plenty of bees. And this is about the third year that it's flowered. So.
Oh, the third year. Okay. Oh, there you go. You might need other pollinating plants in your garden, pollinating attracting plants in your garden to attract more bees into your yard.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right.
Good luck with that,
Brad. Plenty of bees. Oh, well, we'll just keep at it.
Keep at it.
Yeah, thanks for your help.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Pauline in Safety Bay says, Mark, is it too late in the year to plant native tube stock?
Not really. If it's reticulated, I would still plant. Actually, everything grows really well this time of year as long as it gets a bit of moisture. So if you are going to plant tube stock in an area that's not going to get any reticulation, I suggest you'd be killing them off pretty quick. But if it's getting reticulated, great, plant them now. Yep.
Good-o. And Georgia says, I'd love to plant hydrangea, but I've never grown flowers in my garden before. And this is confusing to me. Is it too hard of a starter? I don't really understand that. Is it too hard? I guess she's asking.
Hydrangeas aren't hard. They just need...
I kill them every year.
Oh, you need plenty of good stuff in the soil, so plenty of compost and manure. They do like having a good water, so make sure they're watered regularly. Morning sun, afternoon shade. Our afternoon sun tends to burn them pretty bad. So if you get those conditions right, they're very rewarding.
There you go. Kaz in Australyn says, can you help me with my native clematis? It's about 4 years flowered beautifully but now looking very unhappy. Do I chop it back? What nutrients are safe to use?
Off with the said. That's, I think it sounded more effective coming from you, you know.
Like, it's anonymous over here.
Well, it's actually a clematis that's mixed up with other things, so there's other things growing underneath it. They after they finish flowering, they do go a bit daggy anyway because it's quite taxing on the plant to produce flowers like that. I don't think you need to trim it or do anything really with it. A little bit of slow-release fertiliser to help it recover is good, but I reckon it'll come good next year. They're pretty tough.
There you go. Sounds positive. Kaz, you've just got to put up with it not looking pretty. And I know how it feels. Maybe it's getting on in its years. Suze asks, can I put blood and bone and soil wetter on a palm garden at the same time? Soil needs some loving. If not, do you have other suggestions?
You can do that. I would try and wet the soil beforehand. It sounds odd, because you need a wetting agent to help it wet it. But wetting agent's more effective if the soil's a bit moist to begin with, so it penetrates better. So wet it first, then put the blood and bone and the wetting agent on afterwards.
There we go. We have John in Mandurah. John?
Yeah, yes.
There's someone who occasionally texts in and describes themselves as Hot John. Is that you?
No, not me.
I mean, you could just claim it. Well, and I'd believe you.
Wife. I'll ask the wife.
What's your question for Mark?
I got a desert rose. It's been in a pot for how long have I been in Mandurah? About 8 years, I suppose. It's just budding up at the moment.
Yes.
But I'm wondering what fertiliser I can give it. I've never given it anything before. Carries on regardless.
It is. They're very forgiving, these plants. They're desert rose. They're called adeniums. And they're slow growing and, they like to be kept a bit drier during winter. But now we're getting to the warm weather. They start to thrive on the warm weather. Again, a slow-release fertiliser. Slow-release fertiliser fixes everything, I'm not fans of quick-release fertilisers because you can overdo it and you can burn. But the slow-release granular fertilisers are very effective. And you'd only want to use a little tiny bit, like half a teaspoon. Not much.
Yeah.
Not much at all.
What about the liquid stuff? I did give it a bit of liquid stuff. I'm not allowed to mention names.
Good man.
Yeah, there we go. You can do that. But I wouldn't do it often, just once now that putting out a bit of new growth is be fine. Yep.
Yeah, the flowers, I can just see the flowers coming through.
Exciting. Excellent.
There you go. Good luck with that.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, John. Let me know what your wife says. Bye.
Okay, bye.
if she says lukewarm, John, that'll be disappointing.
Now, I'm going to have to slow down in approaching this word like I'm about to do a dressage horse thing because there are many leaps in it. Atractocarpus.
Okay, you got that.
Fitzalanii.
Fitzlandii.
Yep. Native gardenia.
Yes.
Scott in Bayswater asks if he can propagate easily. If so, how?
Okay. So they do produce big round fruit, not big round fruit. I suppose they're bigger than a golf ball, smaller than a tennis ball size fruit. And you can actually get the seeds out of those and sow them straight away. They've got a lovely white perfume flower, then that's followed by the fruit. You can also do aerial layering on those as well.
Sounds far too complicated. Okay. I read it off the screen.
Oh, okay.
It was not experience talking.
But it could be okay for Scott to do that. So if you look up aerial layering, Scott, you find a branch and you basically get that branch, make a couple of cuts up below the node, wrap it in a bit of sphagnum moss or cocoa fibre, keep it damp, and then that little bit will develop roots. And then once it develops roots, then you can chop it off from the mother plant and then plant that new bit.
And that's why we're called roots and shoots.
There we go.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Another pronunciation challenge from Maureen. This is my Aisha popcorn hydrangea. Oh, just coming into bloom, propagated from a 60-year-old mother plant. Maureen, I'm so jealous. Oh, look, that's so pretty, isn't it? Does look like popcorn. It's round and gorgeous.
I've never heard of a popcorn hydrangea, but it's healthy and, yeah, it's. I think Maureen's just showing off. Yeah.
And Mary says, what is the best fertiliser for a Sir Walter buffalo lawn?
Yes, again, Sir Walter and a lot of buffaloes don't grow as quickly as some of the couch-based lawns. You don't want to use anything that's too high in nitrogen, even though that's an important part of a lawn fertiliser. A good balanced lawn fertiliser that, again, you can get slow-release fertilisers now because in the past we used to chuck heaps of fertiliser on the lawn to make it green and grow, and we'd be out there mowing, you know, every half an hour. And those practices have gone now, so a lot of the modern fertilisers do have more of that slow release, so it prevents nutrient leaching into the ground as well too. So you can get specific buffalo lawn fertilisers, so I'd go get one of those.
Oh, and another question regarding slow release fertiliser. Is there one that's made that's not made using microplastics?
Well, they're not made using microplastics, and there some of the rock dust and things like that are also forms of slow release fertiliser. We talked about rock dust a little while ago. I think Sabrina's into it. Yep, with the lovely Sophie Thompson. You know, we talked about rock dust. So that's a good slow release fertiliser as well if you want to avoid the other one, but it's not microplastics in the other one.
Okay, there you go. I'm just having a little read. It is coming up to 10 o'clock when the Sporty Boys will take over the studio. Just having a little look at the Wellamai Pine, which was discovery on or about September 1994, which I remember that. It feels really recent. And he took specimens to work for identification, expecting someone to be able to identify the plants. After the identification was made, national parks then went under a veil of secrecy.
I know.
With the discoverers not learning the full magnitude of the thing for about 6 months. How amazing. Mm. I need to go home and read about that. I do remember a big fuss and it was all on the news. And it's lovely when we do something special with science here, isn't it?
And when Sir David Attenborough gets excited about something, you know, like that, then, you know, it's a great thing.
Oh,
so,
look, if David Attenborough's been excited about anything in this country, and I'm sure there's much that he has, it's you feel a little bit proud, don't you?
Yeah.
Jackie, we don't have a whole lot of time. Are you able to spit out a question in about 20 seconds?
Yes, 20 seconds. I'm wondering how you go with dragon fruit, please.
Okay, you want to you get some that are you can pollinate. You need two to pollinate. Some are bisexual, so they'll pollinate by themselves. There's a good variety. They're prickly, easy to grow, but you do need a big support for them because they're big and heavy and fall over the place.
Oh, God, it sounds just like me, big and heavy.
Oh.
Okay, then. Thank you very much. I've never grown one before, but I was just wondering, they look interesting.
Easy to grow.
They're very pretty. Jackie, thanks for that.
Okay, thank you.
Bob says, ancient lineage, the Wellamai Pine is an ancient conifer with a fossil record dating back 91 million years. Related fossils from the Cretaceous period have been found in Queensland and Victoria. It is a remarkable thing. Quick one. Can I spray either a pyrethrum or petroleum oil-based mix on a viburnum hedge that is full of biting midges, says Jeff from Capel.
Biting midges. You can. But don't do it during the hot weather. So it's got to be under 30 degrees if you do that. And, that should get rid of them.
And that's it from Roots and Shoots. Just asking Asha, is Sabrina back next week? No, we've got you, haven't we? We've got you for a little while.
Lucky duck.
Lucky ducks. It's 10 o'clock. Bye. Thanks for listening. You can join us live on Saturdays from 9 o'clock.
Head to abc.net.au/Perth
or listen on your radio to ABC Perth on DAB Plus or 720 AM.
You can text your questions in on 0437 922 720.
Call us in the studio on 1300 222 720. Roots and Shoots will be back midweek to answer more of your gardening questions. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating.
And share the episode with all your friends.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.